You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Surfacing Selkies? Yes. And an audience of billions. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Sean Chandler, and you're listening to Your Program is Your Ticket, a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. My guests today are Orr Matthias, Jackson Tucker Meyer, and Aaron Feinstein, who are in representation of Action Play, a neurodivergent theater company scheduled to perform at the 6th Annual Arts for Autism Broadway Concert at the Gershwin Theater. These three artists are part of my Theater is for Everyone series, where I'm interviewing theater artists outside of the major locales and influences to give them a chance to be heard, discuss their work selection and production processes, while touching on their triumphs, challenges, and misconceptions. Action Play is a New York-based programming, outreach, and education organization dedicated to providing children, teens, and adults on the autism spectrum and related conditions equal access to education, arts, and culture. They are dedicated to improving the lives of individuals on the autism spectrum, their families, and the community at large. Please keep in mind that our interviews are recorded at different times to optimize schedules, just in case the audio sounds different. I'm super excited, so let's bring them on.
Hi, guys, and welcome to Your Program is Your Ticket.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. I'm so excited. I think that this sounds like such a really, really wonderful event, and I can't wait to hear all about it. So let's get started, and let's do that by having you introduce yourselves to our listeners. Tell us about yourselves and your role with Action Play and the 6th Annual Arts for Autism Broadway Concert, please.
Hi, I'm Aaron Feinstein. I'm the executive director and founder of Action Play. I started Action Play in 2011. I was a drama club kid who, you know, kind of found my way to the drama room like so many others do, and found it the place where a lot of people who don't quite fit the norm go, and we have great experiences and we meet friends and we have the best time ever. Went on to UCLA, got my MFA in directing, and I started Action Play just to really, I wanted to create an inclusive space for neurodivergent and autistic artists to really explore and create work that is meaningful and develop.
Outstanding. Are you from Southern California?
Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up in the ye old San Fernando Valley.
Ah, I lived in the San Fernando Valley for ages. Woodland Hills.
I grew up in Chatsworth, and you know, spent a bunch of time in Sherman Oaks. So yeah. You know.
Oh yeah. Very, very cool. I didn't go to UCLA, but I didn't go to college anyways. But I did live there, and I was born in Southern California. I lived in Downey, California.
Okay.
If you're familiar with that, that's where the Carpenters are from.
That is a great, I mean, come on. That's as good of a star, you know, born place as I've ever heard.
Exactly. How much fun. Okay. Who's next?
I'm Jackson Tucker Meyer. I am an autistic writer, theater artist, filmmaker, and program director for Action Play. I began volunteering with Action Play in 2019, became program director in 2021, and I helped out both behind the scenes and in the rehearsal room and on the writing of the script and the lyrics for our show, which we just premiered last month, called The Surface. And I've been doing a bit of work behind the scenes to help coordinate our rehearsals for the 6th Annual Arts for Autism concert as well. I've recently been waylaid by COVID, which is why my voice is even more deep and husky and resonant than usual. But thankfully, I managed to do the lion's share of all that work before my brain started hanging upside down, as the song says.
I would have never known. This is the first time I've ever heard your voice, so I would have just thought you just had a deep, commanding, powerful voice, which you probably do anyways. Yeah, it's probably just a
it's
tiny
there, voice. But it's not like full Darth Vader like it is now.
Fun, fun. Okay, or how about you?
Yes, hi, I'm Orr Matias, a composer and music director. Have been working with Action Play now for, this was my first year, so just concluded my first season with this wonderful organization. Grew up in Tel Aviv, Israel, started music at the age of 2, moved to New York at 18 for Juilliard and stayed for grad school, and have really had the great fortune of getting to work mostly in theater for the last decade, both on and off Broadway and kind of all over the country, as well as working with various pop artists and doing a lot of arranging and orchestrating, but have really, really found so much deep, deep love with this organization, and just love writing the music for the show and getting to work with all the talented actors. Just as an aside, I'm deeply envious of Jackson's very low commanding voice because I'm a mezzo soprano, as you can hear in my natural speaking voice. And so I've always coveted the low commanding bass baritone.
Well, I find your timbre very lovely as well, or for what it is worth.
Appreciate Aww. It, my friend.
How nice. It's a great love fest. Love it. Okay, I am a huge fan of some of the projects that you've worked on. And I'm just going to tell you what they are because I have your website printed out here. Of course, I have all your as much of a website as you have printed out here. I won't take too long, Jen, so please indulge me if you will. Love, Great Comet, love it. I was one of the people that Danae Benton sang to when I went and saw it. Do you know what moment I'm talking about?
Yeah,
She goes up, like you're up in this like booth that are up at, and she just sat there on the stairs and looked at me and sang to me for like a minute and a half. I got so nervous. And she's giving such a wonderful performance in The Gilded Age right now. If anybody's watching that or not watching that, she's doing an excellent job. loved First Daughter Suite. What a great cast. What a great cast. Casey Levy. I had put somewhere that like Mary Testa was giving like a masterclass in like musical theater acting, playing Barbara Bush at the end. I mean, all the other actors, as far as I know, they each played two characters except her. And she comes out and just, in my opinion, walked away with the whole entire thing. And so I'm thrilled that you were on that. And also, the one show that I told everybody, they say, Sean, what's your favorite musical this year? And in 2019, I would say Octet. I effing loved Octet. I thought that was such a great show. So wonderful. And I think they just, if I'm not mistaken, they did it in Northern California this year. I think they did it.
I would say we did it. We all flew out there, and it was the same cast, same group, and we did a production at Berkeley Rep. So I actually spent a month and a half in Berkeley in April. So it was lovely, and we got to do it there with the exact same team, same designers, same cast, kind of in hopes of being able to take it to the next level. And maybe, who knows, in the future, bring it back to New York in a bigger, splashier way.
Wow. I even like put on there when I saw the announcement on Facebook, I was like, I love this show. It's great. It's wonderful. So I threw you guys some props. Hopefully it nudged some ticket sales.
Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay. Guys, thank you for letting me fangirl just a little bit right there. I appreciate it. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, how am I just going to get through this now? All right. Gentlemen, tell us about Action Play. What is your mission / overall goal of the company?
The mission is really to provide equal arts opportunities for autistic, neurodivergent, and disabled artists to basically explore the arts, to create work, to have opportunities that, you know, so many folks who are neurodivergent, autistic, and disabled don't get, you know. So in one sense, we're a place where, you know, it could be your first show. It could be the first thing that you've ever done in the theater. We want to be that space. But we also want to make sure that we're always promoting folks that want to do it professionally. So we have things like an audition workshop where we work with Casting Society of America, the largest body of casting directors in the country, who do workshops with us, and we basically put forth folks who really want to connect with the professional casting world, and they get parts, you know, and it really is something. We've seen this kind of paradigm shift within the industry where casting directors want to cast representationally. And, you know, we this group, you know, we love to create original pieces of theater. So that's another thing that we do. We create original musicals from the ground up. We have nothing. We build it over about 20 Sundays, and we create an original work that's really infused with the voices of the folks that are in our AIMS program, which creates original pieces of musical theater.
Very, very cool. Tell me about, is it Selke Free from The Surface, your musical The Surface? Tell me about that. Talk about it.
Well, that's part of, that's basically the closing of Act One number that Orr and I wrote together. It was really interesting. I like sent him the lyrics, I think at like 10 in the morning on like a Saturday one time. Or feel free to fact check me on that, but I think you got it in by like 12, maybe two at like the latest. It was something, it's somewhere in that neighborhood. And it's just such an absolute jam. It starts slow, builds to a rocking vocal finale. And again, like the, just the title itself, Selke Free, you know, it speaks to, I think, the freedom that we give. I just realized a song has free in the title, but like, you know, the freedom and leeway that we give our ensemble of autistic teens and young adults to really make theater that's built around their particular interests and the stories that they want to tell. Sandy Karp, a fabulous action play performer, she was really into Selkies. And she gave us many, many, many stacks of facts about Selkies, which are like these mythological creatures that can be a seal or a human, depending on just how they're feeling, how they're vibing. And so she ended up creating this whole character who was basically one of the leads of the show, based off of this world building and research that she had done. And so, yeah, the song is from this character, this Selke character's point of view. And she's going to be actually singing it in tandem with, I believe, a Broadway performer named Natalie Charles Ellis. I'm just reading it in like a Hooked on Phonics type of way. But yeah, she's been in the Broadway companies of School of Rock and Beetlejuice, I believe. So that's going to be really exciting. We've got a whole new arrangement, once again, by Orr for two vocal soloists and an ensemble of both action play performers and Broadway performers to intermingled, which, you know, to my way of thinking is exactly as it should be.
And I will just add to Jackson's point, it was one of those beautiful kinetic moments where, you know, we had, it took us a minute to kind of, over the course of the months, really find what the tone of the piece was and what the music wanted to feel like, especially for this group of performers. But Sandy always kind of had this effervescent energy to her, and just the amount of depth and detail and care that she was putting not only into her character, but just to her form of expression. It was so clear that she had so much to give vocally. And I very much remember the day you sent me that song, and the way we had been working is that we would talk about scenes, and then Jackson would kind of go away and carve out what he thought would be the right kind of pivotal moment for them to become a singing moment. And I think this was the first one that I saw, and it just felt like one of those Park and Bark glorious kind of, you know, culminative musical theater moments. And I knew that it was for Sandy. And I think it was the first song that I was just like, no questions asked, knew exactly what to do with it. And the lyric was crafted in such a brilliant way that, like Jackson said, by, I think within a couple hours, the song was there and it hadn't changed since. And Sandy, I mean, she's just a force of nature. She's so, so, so brilliant. I can't wait for people to see her. And just as another, just like fun aside, I've known Natalie for about a decade. So when I moved to the city and had just started writing songs, Natalie was one of the first people who said to me, like, just, you know, I'll come over, we'll work on your stuff. You can hear how it sounds, you know, in a female register. And I've known her for such a long time. And it's so fun to see her getting to be part of this community too now.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
I saw Natalie understudy in both Beetlejuice and in School of Rock. I got to catch one of the performances where she played, I believe the character's name is Rosie, the principal in School of Rock. She has a sensational voice.
She's phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah, I just remember being like so blown away. Wonderful, wonderful acting chops, and just it's that's a really, really nice partner to partner up with your team member. So it's that's awesome.
Absolutely.
Did we tell you about what the piece is about that we did?
I was just going to ask you right now. That was my next question. please, someone tell us what The Surface is about.
So the full title of The Surface is The Surface, and then in parentheses, or That One Time Atlantis Washed Up on the Beach. And again, this is coming out of like people's various interests. Like we started a Google Doc when we were still in Zoom rehearsals at the very beginning, where people could just like popcorn various ideas with like no pressure to like make it into a part of the musical or not. But people were interested in ancient civilizations, I believe, sort of like a fairy tale narrative. Frozen was definitely bandied about. We didn't incorporate literal aspects of that because we don't want to get sued, but we were able to like sort of take
smart
elements from that narrative that people really resonate with, and of course the Selkie element as well. So it really became a piece about Atlantis washing up on the shores of Coney Island and the wild culture clash that happens. And also this character, Ona the Selkie, meeting a street musician named Verdi and the friendship that's really forged out of that.
What an intriguing storyline. Like, I mean, I understand it, but I have a lot of questions about it, too, that I'm sure the show will answer, right? Or is answering now, right?
I mean, I'll give like a little pocket synopsis of it at the Arts for Autism thing. But yeah, it's sort of, you know, and feel free to stop me if I'm just like super rambling. But it's the story of this, you know, monarchistic society clashing against like these really like rough and tumble street musicians on the boardwalk. We definitely love to incorporate our actors' musical talents into there. A lot of them play an instrument or instruments. And actually the guy playing Verdi brought in an instrument that he'd like made. It was like this homemade French horn out of like a length of pipe and like a mouthpiece. And we ended up incorporating it in the show. We made it like this weird like folk instrument of Atlantis. But yeah, it's basically a big cast of like zany characters that these young people created or really wanted to play. And then it basically just became our job to sort of artfully knit together and synthesize these very creative ideas that the whole ensemble of about 15 actors was bringing to the table. So yeah. And we felt that putting Atlantis and smashing it into Coney Island was the most straightforward way of going about it.
So it was your team all submitting ideas of characters that they wanted to play. Yes. And then who is the person who brought that all together into the story that it is now? Who wrote essentially the book for it?
Well, it's a collective effort at the end of the day. I mean, we really try to conduct ourselves as a company and as a staff by the ethos of devised theater, where it's really all hands on deck, both in the ensemble and behind the scenes, to sort of like come up with a sort of unified vision. I was credited in the program as script supervisor, meaning that I did do a lot of work in terms of like knitting together these ideas, but also a lot of it just came from like improvisations that we recorded. A big part of the work is born out of improvisation. And there's many a time when really the work, I didn't really have to do much. Like the scene was already there. And it was just a matter of making it fit within like two other brilliant scenes that had been improvised. So if you consider the person who writes the script to be the person who's typing it out, then I guess that was mostly me. But even then, it was still like the staff getting together and brainstorming and, of course, building off of the great ideas and improvisations of the ensemble as well.
Wow. I love that. I love that everybody sort of gets a hand in it. And usually that's so not okay. Not usually. Sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes that's too many sort of cooks in the kitchen, but it sounds like your team is just so unified that that you were lucky, or that you're lucky that you have this great group of artists who can come together and who understand each other to put all of this together. I write books for musicals. It's hard work in general, just doing it on your own, but to have a big group of people like that all weaving their ideas in is, that's amazing.
I think action play our AIMS program is really like the quintessential too many cooks in the kitchen, but also can create like a great thing. And I think a lot of it is because there's a great respect for everybody who's working together. So I think ultimately it's like, even in our conversations where we're trying to move a plot element or along, as I think of this one moment, we have this, one of our cast members, a guy named Patrick, really liked Gilbert and Sullivan, like loves Gilbert and Sullivan musicals. So we just started like amongst the staff trying to figure out like, what's the Gilbert Sullivan way we can get into act two. You know, we were thinking like, okay, well maybe it's like the royal rompy kind of thing. And like, you know, and like it kind of introduced the idea. So even in the moments where we kind of get stuck and we can't move it along, it still kind of goes back to the company and goes back to the ideas and passions and loves. So it's always a stew of ideas. And I think over the years, we've just gotten, you know, better at helping to knit them together, because that's kind of the ethos. It's like so many folks that are autistic and neurodivergent have these really singular passions and interests. And it's like, I think part of the whole thing that we do is we honor those passions and interests, and we don't want to like take that away, but we also have to build it into an ensemble format. You know, if there's one thing I can say about, you know, being neurodivergent and also working with autistic folks and working with neurodivergent folks, there's a lot in our lives, and definitely autistic people's lives, where they get these interests kind of taken away from them. Mm-hmm. So we try to be a place that really celebrates all of that and makes it happen, you know?
Wow.
And also just add is, you know, this, like I said, this was my first year, and admittedly, you know, I've done so much work with so many different groups of people, some of which has also been devised. But I will admit that in the first, I'd say probably couple months, I felt a little bit like a deer in headlights, just seeing how every single idea that was brought in by every single member was not only honored, but lifted up to be just as important as any other idea that was brought into the room. And I remember sitting there and thinking to myself, how the hell is this all going to come together? There's just no way. There are too many disparate ideas. And I think, looking now at the final product, I can safely attest that every single important idea that was brought up by a member has made it into the final product, which does make sense. And I think it is 100% due to the level of uncompromising generosity of not only the acting company, but the staff. And even seeing it just in meetings before and after rehearsal, seeing how people relate to one another, how they lift each other's ideas up, and always yes and, was just kind of a masterclass in how anything can be molded into greater than the sum of its parts if the right energy is there to guide it. And it was really kind of a masterclass in collaboration for me this last year.
That's outstanding. Had you ever written a song in one day?
Oh, yes.
As you had? Okay.
I mean, I you know, Sean, I'm a freelance artist. I've written five in a day when there's a deadline looming. So
right?
that's not new, but this was done with so much love, which is often not not often, but sometimes not always the case. And there was always just such a sweet spot in my heart for every moment of work through the process, which is so unique.
Wow, that's outstanding. Is Action Play just all about theater, or are there other types of programs that that you have available?
So yeah, I mean, we do a number of things, but you know, we're into doing professional development for organizations. We've really started to branch. We used to really work primarily in the art space, but now we're getting interesting calls from like tech companies and folks like that. And it seems to be working. I mean, you know, who would think a bunch of like wacky artists, you know, get to talk to the scientists and the number crunchers, and like, and they're really inspired by just kind of figuring out ways to work and understand and really, you know, build a place that's inclusive of neurodivergent and autistic individuals and minds. And really, you know, it's through that understanding that I think, you know, that we live in a time where there are so many different identities that are not, I want to say, the classic, you know, normal employee or the norm, whatever that means, you know? And so I think we really encourage people to kind of open that space up and to really look at the skills that different people bring into the workplace and into the arts environment. But we also do, as I said, I talked about our audition workshop. We do a mentorship program as well, where we professionally mentor young autistic artists and, you know, individuals who really want to have careers in potential, you know, we our sweet spot is obviously the arts, but as I said, to your question, we're really branching out into other industries as well.
Wow. And with the arts, the programs within the arts, in Action Play, do you have sub programs, for tech, like for directing or lighting design, things like that?
Do that, but what we've done is when people come in with the interest, we always make sure that they have an opportunity, a platform. We get a lot of people who want to perform, but we have had folks that were interested in tech. And like when we're building a show, we throw them in the mix. I mean, theater is, that's the best part about theater to me, is it's like, it's this great platform where all these different types of people can create together. I mean, that's one of the biggest takeaways I always got from theater, is like, it's a platform, you know, it's a platform for people that are performers, people that are scientists. It's just, you know, it has this great space that incorporates all sorts of folks and all sorts of talents.
Wow. That's great. I better be careful, because now people are going to be calling you asking for programs that deal with theater tech, right?
We're ready. We'll do it. You know, like, I mean, I think that's one of the places that we really want to continue to expand, is just how we can incorporate all of these different passions and skills. I mean, we, if anything, as I said, that is what the theater is, you know, that's what it should be.
Well, or said it best with the yes and answer. I love that you said that, because I think it's great when there are companies who it's like, yes, and what can we do? Yes. And we will do that. The answer is yes. What's the question? And you have taken that that phrase, and you have really applied it. And I think it's great. And I think it's really inspirational. I mean, any group of people who is looking for someone to support them, if that particular support element, if they could all have that particular philosophy, then I think that our world would look a lot better and be a lot better. It's really nice. It means nobody's like too cool for school. You know what I mean? That's just,
I always felt that theater was, you know, was that, like, I just felt like, you know, it's like you got called a theater nerd when you were in high school, because you went to that drama club place with all the other theater nerds. But, you know, I to me, it was just like, if you only knew, like, yeah. If you only knew that we were having like way more fun than you. We were just like having so much more fun than the people that weren't in that room. So it's always that funny thing where it's like, maybe through shows like Glee and, you know, kind of the more pop exposures of what a theater nerd is or a theater, you know, kid is, maybe that started to like demystify some of that. But you know, I kind of take a lot of pride in it, in the sense that I think that room, that drama club, whatever it is, becomes a really safe space. And one of the things that we get a lot of great feedback about with our company is that we create a safe space, a really safe space where people can really, you know, explore the multiple hats that we all get to wear in life, but you get to do it in this kind of unique platform where it's okay to do that. You know, it's okay to be like incredibly villainous. It's okay to be incredibly weird. It's okay to be, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
I remember after I found the drama room, I never ate lunch anywhere else again in that school. And you're right. We were having a great time, you know? So I totally agree. I think that's a great, wonderful analogy. What are some of the challenges facing Action Play as an overall company?
I'll start that one and just say, you know, as a small company, it's always, you know, you're always trying to kind of keep your head afloat financially and trying to figure out ways to, you know, we have to do the money raising game and all of that sort of stuff. A lot of things that kind of were counterintuitive to me as just a theater dude. You know, I think we've all had to learn that that's what makes these things go. So, you know, it's always about how to, you know, sustain the programs that we have and also grow in appropriate ways. But, you know, I think the interesting thing about it is how we grow in a way that is honors that kind of small community vibe. And I think how we've always felt about it, or at least how I've always felt about it, is that I like that small community vibe. I would never want to just grow like, you know, just like, you know, I'm going to use the phrase guns a blazing, but, you know, like, you know, full on, you know, we're just growing because we grow. Like, you know, it's like, no, it's like there's something about like keeping things within a really respectful, you know, intimate kind of way and growing appropriately. I don't know if I'm phrasing that right, but yeah.
Right. Just keeping things sort of corralled, if you will, within the proper amount of people and not letting it get so big that things get out of control and you lose sight of your mission. Am I getting it right now?
I think you said it brilliantly.
Oh, wow. That's the nicest compliment I've had in 3 years. Appreciate that. That's very nice. Okay. Now, before we get into our last set of questions, I have a question for you guys. What is park and bark? I have no idea what that is. Or I think you brought that up. Park and bark. I've never heard that before.
I think it's just, it's a phrase that was traditionally used for big solo numbers, whether if they're torch songs or 11 o'clock numbers or whatever it is, where the soloist just stands with a single spotlight wherever they are on the stage and they belt out a big old song. And I think that's at least how I got to know the term. It usually pertained to a solo epic song where, you know, there's a big spot on the character and they genuinely park and bark.
So like On My Own from Les Miserables.
You got it.
Right. Eponine just stands there and just sings in one place and, you know, brings the house down. So, okay. I kind of thought that's what it was, but you know, I'm
so bad. Train dogs and seals, right, to bark a melody that a genius like Orr has written. You know, that's part of our company too. You know, we have a zoo of trained seals and dogs.
You know, I'm still basking my one compliment that I've received all year. So I don't want to, you know, improperly guess, and I don't want to ruin my reputation.
We should expand into the animal kingdom. That's the thing. Like, cats can be diagnosed as autistic. Fun fact. Very interesting. Wow. We should get a cat ensemble, or just do cats.
Or just do That'd cats. Be fun too. Yeah. I mean, I feel like some part of me is like slightly like opposed to it, but I also know your love of the musical Cats, Jackson, and that is good. That's like almost enough for me to say yes and
yes. Wow.
That's a yes maybe.
I mean, listen, the Gilbert and Sullivan thing is already like we have this company member who's just like is like obsessed, and I am not. I'm a very persuasive case. Yeah, you know, they're fun and all that, but people like I also know love Gilbert and Sullivan, like are wild about it. But he's like, we should really do one. He's like, they're in the common domain. We won't have to pay for it. I'm like,
He was also like, there's a lot of rich old people that out there who love Gilbert and Sullivan. He like really, you know, he practically had like a whole PowerPoint presentation. It was cool.
Yeah. Now, Jackson, do you like cats? Is it one of your...
There's nothing like it. And that's enough for me. I just commit so hard to like a specific way of doing things that you really don't see anywhere else. I really admire that. For reference, another one of the best musicals that I ever saw, in my opinion, was the Meatloaf musical, Bat Out of Hell. That completely blew me away, you know. And there's other works of art that people would say are kind of, you know, more conventionally on the good side that also have that quality for me. But I find like that sort of unique energy to be very, very compelling.
I'm going to have to catch that when I go to London. That's the only place I can ever find that musical.
Is it still playing there?
I don't know. Hopefully. We'll cross my fingers. It feels like it was playing there the other 8 or 9 times I was there before COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll cross my fingers.
Is an electronic motorcycle involved?
Yeah, yeah. They got the motorcycle in there. They got all of that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
Don't make me promises that you can't keep, because I love to see an audio animatronic motorcycle, right?
Oh, yeah. And they had like a table that turned into like a big Cadillac for Paradise by the Dashboard Light. It was like a bunch of stuff going on. It was fabulous.
Okay. I could talk about this kind of thing forever because I love theater like that. Same here. So we're going to have to move. I did want to say, though, that just a little plug for my friend Mike's podcast, Broadway Podcast Network. There is a podcast that he does. It's called The Wrong Cat Died. You should listen to it. And he brings people on from Cats or who have association from Cats, because he thinks that Grizabella is the wrong cat to have died in that show. And so he's got this whole podcast with more episodes than me about, you know, people coming on and going, no, I think it should have been, I don't know, Deuteronomy or whoever. And just it's a good podcast. It's funny.
That's awesome. That's really in the spirit of Cats, in terms of like just committing to a very specific bit for a very extended period of time.
Right. That's great. I never even thought of that.
Thank you.
I have to check that out for sure.
Oh, it's and he gets like people like from, like he had Mamie Paris on, who played Grizabella for like 2 years in the last revival, who's a very nice lady, by the way.
Nice.
All right. Tell us, what are some of the misconceptions that people have about neurodivergent artists?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it a misconception necessarily, but often I feel like I've encountered a sort of received wisdom that actors who are autistic with low support needs versus high support needs should most likely, you know, be in like a separate sort of ensemble. But we don't really roll that way with action play. We have actors who are very like low support needs. We've got other actors who are almost, if not fully, nonverbal, or like only communicate by like repeating like snippets of conversation that they've overheard like on the subway or something. And we've all like found ways to make that work within, as both an ensemble of just people and an ensemble of actors putting on and creating a very specific show. Aaron has a lot more lived experience than me in this regard, so he can probably speak to that a little bit better. But I like to think that's a bit of conventional wisdom that we've kind of blown past a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I also think that like there's this like ethos of like really like pie in the sky, like everything has to be like cheery and hopeful kind of, you know, and it's like we can have a show that's positive or whatever, but I always think like everything that we create has a snarky, you know, sense of irony or some, you know, like there's always, you know, folks come in with just such cutting ideas too. And it's like, it's hard to just sit there and say like, I think there's this like brand of neurodivergent theater that's like everything's always like balloons and roses. And I don't know, I feel like I just like in my core have too much of a punk rock attitude to kind of like actually believe that that's the way things should be, you know, and you know, maybe that's a little, but Jackson, I know you're that way too, or I feel like you're that way too, you know, it's like, I think it's just the, you know, we want to create pieces that are complex and rich and interesting. And, you know, even if we're working with performers that have, you know, minimal language or whatever, I feel like we've always figured out ways to, you know, shine the light and make sure that they have an important place in the show and an important part, and you know, make sure that their voice is respected in that regard too, you know.
Wow. Jackson, I'm sorry, please go ahead.
I was just gonna add one more thing, that one of the most beautiful things I heard when I joined the company was that like I said, I had never worked with a group comprised of neurodivergent performers. And one of the things that I asked Jackson when we started working on the musical in terms of the scope, I said, so how much do we narrow the parameters? And Jackson said, we don't. Jackson just said, we write the thing and we perform it and they learn it. And we don't actually cater to anything except the work that we want to create, because they can perform anything. And that was just something that was so obvious once Jackson said it, and became so clear once I was in the room. But I think that certainly for me, there was this trepidation coming into it and not fully knowing what the communication was going to feel like, what the level of execution was going to be able to hold or entail. And one of the huge moments of debunking for me was that it was just like, just write it and it's going to be amazing. And it was amazing. And just seeing them, I mean, it's so emotional, just seeing everybody step up and say like, yeah, we love performing this shit, bring it on. And it made me want to do more.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, to your credit, like, you were, like, composing via Zoom at the starts. You legit had not had a chance, I believe, to hear most of these folks' singing voices, because it obviously, like, Zoom singing just doesn't work. It's not a thing. So you were definitely not, like, composing on easy mode for a large part of that rehearsal process. So I think that's also a testament to your incredible professionalism and craft as well. But yeah, I mean, it's all about, like, giving people like the shot that they want to take. I feel like if they want to, like, we literally had an ensemble member who was very like, she wanted to play a villain. She was very open about that. Like, and so we definitely like work to give her like, and meet her like, in terms of like the ideas that she was bringing to the table and developing them, and just giving her like just a really, really villainous, wicked villain, and really relishing that task. And also, like, so much of the joy of creating for this ensemble, I think, is just the fact that it is writing for an ensemble. And once you have like those voices in mind, like singing voices and also like speaking voices, like their particular rhythm to, it just like opens up and really makes the job very easy.
Yeah, I was going to say earlier, Jackson, I printed up your website too. I tried to do a lot of research, and I can't see you shoehorned into anything. I mean, this is, I love all of these ideas. They're just like, so some of them are just so out there, and you just, and I love that you commit to them. I mean, you've got Mutant Mammal, Captain McCrispies, Banana Guy and Banana Girl. These are, I don't feel like any of that's written.
Yeah, you know, it's whether it's my own personal work or action play, it's all about just creating something that I personally, like, as an autistic person, would enjoy. Just me as, like, a person in general with my own weird tastes, like, just something that I'd enjoy seeing on the stage. But, yeah, I'm very tickled. That's the first time I think I've heard, like, those three titles, like, in tandem spoken by somebody else. That was quite an experience.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It was an experience to speak them together, too. It's funny. So you were saying... or that you were writing songs over Zoom, right? Over the, was that because of COVID?
Yeah. So for the majority of the season, we actually had all the sessions on Zoom. And correct me, Aaron and Jackson, if I'm wrong, but I think it wasn't until March or late March, early April. That we started, March that we started getting in the room together. But pretty much from October when we began, the sessions were on Zoom. So yeah, there was a lot of figuring out how to rehearse, how to get people into a flow. And what we did a lot of breakout rooms. We did a lot of improvisations, and that was kind of the only opportunity where I really got to hear people's voices, because even, you know, I wrote this goodbye song for the group, and even just at the end singing the goodbye song together, of course it's on Zoom, so you hear it with like 25 different time lags, and you can't really get a sense of what the ensemble feels like together. And so it was a lot of conjecture in terms of putting the score together, and also certainly the element of you never actually really get to hear things in sequence, because you can't even really sing things on Zoom. You can't rehearse with a piano when you're online. And so there was a lot of us, the three of us, and especially with the remainder of the staff, meeting and taking a listen to the materials, taking a look at them, and figuring out kind of in a vacuum how the thing is starting to take shape. And it was certainly a challenge, but one that I think makes kind of the final product even more inspiring. The fact that we were able to get where we did without seeing each other in flesh until maybe the fifth month in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's really interesting. I don't think a lot of people understand the delay that comes with doing a show. I mean, we're on a relatively decent, you know, conversation timing situation on this call. But I wrote a script or a musical called Running, and we wanted to record five solos during COVID. And this was insane. It was like there was a guy who was engineering it. He had to create a click track, and then the vocalist sang to the click track, and then they added the music into the, I mean, it was just crazy. If anybody really wants to know the situation, they can go to the Running the Musical Facebook page, and I did a video of how it all worked out. It was only because I was just fascinated, but it's not the best way to rehearse music.
No. And like, we did a whole musical last year that we did in the same way on Zoom, where we recorded everything in Zoom rooms, and had, you know, we didn't do it in the squares. We edited it all together. We did it incredibly professionally, but it was very similar. And this process too, it's like, it was much more similar to making a film, you know, where you have to go and you have to kind of cobble all the scenes together and work out all the tech things in advance. And it was a beast, man. It was like, wow. I think people, I think you're right that because of all these edited, you know, like the Jimmy Kimmel clips where everyone looks like they're doing it all together, and yet people don't realize that that was a masterful sound edit that somebody created, you know, off of individual tracks, even if they were harmonizing or whatever. It's like, and it's so funny. It really did kind of, I feel like Yeah, it's like it hasn't been fully demystified, but it's like everybody sat around for like a year watching these Zoom videos that were created at home, but no one really knows that like behind the scenes we were like sweating.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Kimmel is like studio money. So just Everyone out there who thinks it's, you know, it was so easy for them, that's a lot of resources put into that, and I believe me, I completely get it. As somebody who had to deal with it,
I do just want to acknowledge, since we have the platform, that of all of the huge disadvantages that we had to face in getting and having to do things remotely for a while, I think one of the things that we realized and that we learned and that I hope we don't go back from is the inclusivity that it allows in terms of allowing people to be part of a group which otherwise might not have been able to, either because they are their physical location is far away or because their physical ability does not allow them to join. And I think one of the things that I really learned in the last 2 years is that we have gotten to the point where with technology, even once we start going back to fully in person, there's kind of no excuse at this point to leave people behind. And I hope that's something that we really take with us and really implement kind of across the board in the industry is making sure that we use technology to our advantage, even when we are healthy and able to meet in person.
I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment for sure. I've done a fair bit of work in the disability theater sphere and the sort of the common opinion across the board there, you know, not to make it a whole monolith or anything, but a lot of people are like, yeah, Zoom was actually really nice for this community. And, you know, you saw it in the work that we were doing in Zoom here. Like there were some people who really sort of felt a little freer to come out of their shells in the Zoom environment, and particularly in Zoom breakout rooms, where it's a very small group setting, which is definitely very conducive to creating work together, because you're not so like part of like a huge thing. I'm very, very excited to potentially figure out ways that we can integrate virtual work into our programs in the future. It's very exciting to think about.
That is. So it's great that you said that. I did a series called Act Two Places, where I interviewed throughout the pandemic, I interviewed various theater companies, ensembles, teachers, artists about what was going on with them during the pandemic. And as in the very beginning, it was just like, we're just trying to keep everybody healthy and a roof over their head and money and all of that. But as they got towards where we were, I don't want to say working our way out of it, but starting to, Jackson, a lot of people said that. They're like, there are things that we've learned electronically that we can now bring into our work that we may have turned our nose up to before. And so that's, you're not the first person to say that. Like so many people have said that. And I think that's cool. Why not bring technology into it? I mean, then it can always help us. And if we can find ways to help us, then why not? You know, maybe we could start being a little more cutting edge again. And so it's people like you who have that idea and who knew that probably before we did, before COVID happened. So that's very cool. Okay. I gotta let you guys go, but before we do, if you could have three wishes for Action Play, what would they be? Each one of you gets a wish.
Oh man, that's a great question. Three wishes for Action. So I get three. Oh, we each get one wish?
You each get one wish.
Oh man. Okay. You know, I wish we had a much bigger audience. I wish we had like billions of people, even though they're probably, you know, like that just like loved our work and wanted to come see everything. That's my biggest wish for Action Play. Billions of people.
Okay. That's totally, totally realistic. Okay. Or how about you?
I'd say as somebody new to the organization, I wish that the organization was able to do anything interesting to the organization without having to account for how much it costs to make it work.
Okay. Jackson?
I totally co-sign both of those wishes. And this just occurred to me. I feel like it could be really cool to have an action play band of some sort. Like, we've got, like, all these different, like, music makers. And we've got, like a little, like, chorus group that occasionally does, like, performances. But an action play instrumental ensemble, I feel like, could be really, really interesting to play around with. Like, the talent's already there.
I agree. And fun. We should also have Geddy Lee be in the band.
Absolutely. Yes.
I don't know who that is, if you'd like
Geddy
to elaborate.
Geddy Lee is the lead singer, bassist, and high-voiced genius of the band Rush.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm nerds.
We'll get Geddy Lee and Iggy Pop as well.
Yep, Geddy Lee. Yeah.
I know who that is, actually. And of course, I know Rush, too, but it's been a while. Wow. I've got to be the oldest person in this Zoom room, and you guys are pulling up Rush, and I love it. I love it. It makes me feel like I left something behind. All right. Before we go, someone tell our audience your social media information so they can keep up with all of you and they can get tickets. And if you have a place where people can go, where they can connect with everything else, that's best, like a website that, I don't know, that takes them to Facebook and all the other social apps.
My social security number is, no, I'm just kidding.
It's getting there.
I know, right? It's like not quite a joke. So our website is actionplay.org. And then we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Action Play Arts.
Okay.
I mean, you know, facebook.com/, but it's Action Play Arts is the handle.
All right, cool.
And with regards to the upcoming Arts for Autism concert, you can get tickets now at www.artsforautism.net. And I believe they're also available on TodayTix as well.
And we're going to be at the Gershwin, which is like amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that. Yeah. We're at the Gershwin, like where Wicked is.
It's home of Wicked. I mean, like, so, you know, the wickedliest, cool, neurodivergent theater group is going to be on stage at the Gershwin.
Wow.
Wicked awesome.
I can actually see that theater from right outside of the window that's behind you. I'm not opening up the blinds to hide anything. It'll just blind you, literally blind you. Your vision will go dark for a second there. You guys, this has been such a wonderful interview. The three of you have been sensational guests. I'm so, so excited for all of you and your show that's upcoming and the fact that it's in the Gershwin Theater where they do Wicked. And I think that what you're doing is incredible. I want you to know that I'm humble. I really, really am. So thank you so much.
It's, thank you for having us.
It's my pleasure. Or Jackson and Aaron, thank you for being on the show. You've been amazing, and I wish you all many broken legs on the show and everything that you do in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, folks, the 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to Orr Matthias, Jackson Tucker Meyer, and Aaron Feinstein and the great people at Action Play. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket on the Broadway Podcast Network, who has honored me with a place on their incredible theater podcast platform. Broadway Podcast Network is all about creating an engaging, immersive, user-friendly experience where theater stories of all kinds can be easily found, shared, and enjoyed. Please visit them on my landing page at bpn.fm/ypiyt. Again, that's bpn.fm/ypiyt. Your Program Is Your Ticket is also on Facebook at facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket, Instagram at Your Program Is Your Ticket, YouTube at Your Program Is Your Ticket, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, Deezer, TuneIn, Listen Notes, and the UK-based theater platform Thespi. FYI, I appreciate all good ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. Another quick note of thanks to the Communicator Awards for honoring Your Program Is Your Ticket with 4 awards, an Award of Excellence for individual episodes in the Arts and Culture category, and 3 Awards of Distinction, 2 for my Act Two Places series, 1 in the Entertainment category, and 1 in the Educational category, and 1 for me in the Features Host category. Isn't that nice of them? I'm extremely grateful for the honor and owe it all to my wonderful guests, listeners, and Broadway Podcast Network family. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer. Give them all great ratings and reviews, and most importantly, donate, donate, donate. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. And remember, theater is for everyone.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.